Welcome to episode blah 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 on blah 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 day of the quarantine. We're calling this episode, David, the Great Divide. And I think we'd like to, and what we're talking about is open or close, which way do you go, what do you do? But before we get into that, I think you'd actually like to share some good news with the viewers and listeners.
I would, thank you, Ian. Really good news. So earlier this week was Giving Tuesday, as you're probably aware. WICN did a fundraiser as part of Giving Tuesday. We had a goal of $5,000. Our listeners are really amazing. This community is incredible. I can't thank them enough. We surpassed our goal by a pretty wide margin. In this time where people are struggling, businesses are closed, people are out of work, for the response that we received from this audience, we're all blown away by the generosity and the care and the kind words that came through. So thank you to the WICN audience, all of the listeners out there, whether you're local or you're streaming us online from elsewhere in the world that contributed. Thank you so much. We love you. We really are just blown away by how generous you are. Thank you again for really helping us through and make Giving Tuesday a big success.
How does this Giving Tuesday compare to previous Giving Tuesdays?
We approached it a little bit differently this time. We had strategic emails sent out over the past week to different lists of donors in the past. We did a lot on social media to promote in advance. We did a lot of stuff on air to promote in advance. I think unlike the typical Giving Tuesday in November, where it's kind of the seasonal, there's Small Business Saturday, Cyber Mondays, Giving Tuesday. This was designed to be a response to the economic impact of the shutdowns across the country and really across the world. And people just feel inspired, I think, to step up and help nonprofits to succeed. They understand that we've been hugely impacted by the shutdowns. We've lost 70% of our underwriting revenue, for example, just overnight. And a lot of that's not going to come back for a year. So for this audience to demonstrate that they care so much about the station and really any nonprofit, I know Arts Worcester down the hall from us did a similar fundraiser. They did pretty well yesterday. A lot of people recognize the value that nonprofits like this bring to the community. They value the arts and culture and how important that is to the vibrancy of the community. And they step up and support accordingly. And we're so grateful. And really, we're all blown away. We were texting last night at 10 o'clock that this is, can you believe that we did this? And it really is, it's a testament to the team here. And I got to give major credit to our development director, Melanie LaBeouf, and Emily Morrow, who's our membership coordinator. The on-air staff, Michelle, our production director, who did an incredible job getting the promos on and kicked it off with a great show from 6 to 10, Joe and Tyler as well during the day. It was a huge team effort. We did it. And again, to the audience, we just can't thank you enough.
Yeah, first of all, congratulations. That's really good news. And it also says you have to still ask. You still have to reach out. You still have to find your community. Right. And it's more important now than it's ever been. And you're not the only not-for-profit or charity that needs help. Where a lot of people are struggling and seeing a lot of their endowments go. So let's get active about it. If it wasn't for this pandemic, you probably wouldn't have done it this way, but you had to innovate. And as I keep saying, disruption, innovation is how businesses grow. There's a lot to be learned by taking advantage of this crisis, if it's a weird thing to say, to change the way you approach fundraising, to change the way you approach getting your business, to change the way you approach customers. And this is the time, either do it or don't. But as we said last week, it's never going back. It's not going to go back to where it was, because at this point it would cost more. And a lot of the things that we thought were going to work don't work anymore. They're not going to be there.
That's right. And it's also a testament, if you think if you can donate $25, $50, that it's not going to make a big impact, it does. And most of the donations that we get are in that range, small dollar, $50 here and there. Some people step up a little bit more if they can afford to. But if you think that your donation of $25 or $50 won't make a difference, it actually does make a huge difference. It goes right into our operating account so we can stay in the air and keep bringing you new programming and keep developing programs when we're able to have people in the studio again. And I'm blown away at the generosity of our community and the support that we have. And like many nonprofits you do your thing day in and day out and hope that you're having some impact. And when you see the response, it shows people really do care and appreciate what you do. And it just means the world to us.
If you can collect a nickel, you can collect a dime, you can collect a quarter. It's a stream of revenue that you don't ever have to give back. You can keep it going forward, which leads us to the whole topic of the show is, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay open or should I close? What do we do now? And we're seeing a huge, basically divide of people who say you have to open right now. We're losing money. We'll never make it back. This economy will never recover. And other people are saying, if you open right now and you have to close again, it'll be 10 times worse than if we had just stayed closed 60 more days or 30 more days. And the fight about this is actually incredible. And it's actually something worth discussing, because if you're a business owner, if you're a homeowner, if you're a mom or a dad, anybody, you're being torn from all different directions about what to believe. At the end of the day, I'm sure you feel the stress of this economy. But honestly, what is behind all of this discussion right now? First off, we can just talk about the protests you're seeing are not organic. These protests are actually organized political events that are actually financed. And right now we know that the DeVos Foundation and that Cambridge Analytica is sponsoring these protests. So if I'm a business owner, or I'm a mom and I'm a dad, and I see a bunch of people on the Capitol building with signs yelling about open this up, you know, that sounds like it's something I should pay attention to, but it's not really where most people are, right, Aaron?
No, yeah, it isn't where most people are. I think there are some, there are certainly some people who feel that way. You know, there is some disinformation out there, and you know, I've seen a few of my Facebook friends go that route. Unfortunately, they don't believe that, you know, coronavirus is as dangerous as all the scientists and biologists say it is, and they see these protests as proof that they're right. I mean, what do you think about when you see these protests?
I'm horrified that people are so opposed to facts, to right. basic science. You know, for you as a journalist, I can't imagine what it must be like to watch people just debate reality, essentially.
It is.
And say, no, it's a hoax. And now my Facebook feed, much like yours, is filled with people posting this plandemic video from YouTube, which is nonsense.
Right.
And the stupid memes that with the logical fallacies that somehow Bill Gates is behind all this because he has the cure and the vaccine, or he has the virus and the vaccine. It, you know, part of the divide in this country is that, you know, it's not just political, it's reality. It's people willing to just believe from the far reaches of the internet things that are at best spurious science, at worst outright lies and disinformation, designed only to further increase the divide here, whether it's done by natives or by foreign actors. But that's making it so much worse. You know, to actually get past the virus, not have a horrible second wave in the fall because we didn't pay attention, we opened up too soon, we stopped social distancing, people aren't wearing masks and all the things that are required, it's going to make it worse. The virus doesn't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, independent, liberal, conservative. It makes no difference. Anyone can get it and kill you. In terms of opening businesses, I think there's no hard and fast rule. It has to be on a case-by-case basis, by category, what's essential, what's non-essential, but can open with strict parameters to make sure we're taking every precaution possible. Because in reality, the virus isn't going away. It does exist. If you don't believe it exists, that's fine. You don't have to believe that today is today, but it doesn't change the calendar.
It doesn't. And opening the businesses now, I mean, I see some fear. There's a lot of small business fear. You're about to lose. You're on the hook to lose everything that you've worked towards. And so in your mind, you say, okay, if we open up, then I can make that revenue back. But the fact of the matter is that the economy has changed from March. And a lot of that, you know, I'll use landscaping as just an example. But there are, you know, middle landscaping companies whose clientele are, you know, more of like the middle class, who might be cutting back costs. And they're not going to necessarily need your services right now. That could be like the first thing that gets cut. I've seen a lot of my friends in that position who used to have a landscaper and who now are like, I'm just gonna learn how to do it myself. So, right. but as a landscaper, you're rushing to open up because you think that's the fix. It might not be the fix.
The money won't necessarily be there. We in Maine, in Sunday River, the restaurant opened up against the state orders. Basically he got his employees to come back, made a big announcement, we're going to open this up, screw the state. And, you know, all of a sudden there's all these people there, nobody's wearing masks, people are hugging, people are hanging out. And then, you know, the state sweeps in, pulls his liquor license and suspends his operations. Okay, what does that cost? What was his motivation in opening up the restaurant? He said he wanted to open up the restaurant because he was worried about his employees and the fact that they weren't making any money. The reality of it is he didn't want to pay the unemployment, and that this is costing him money. But at the end of the day, they have unemployment insurance for a reason, and there is assistance for a reason. he just decided that his business is more important than the lives of the people that work in his office.
And
that's what it really comes down to. And I'm not trying to be mean about it, but the fact of the matter is he has the same opportunity to open up a drive-through. He has the same opportunity to provide packaged meals. He has the same opportunity to provide his craft brewed beer in a drive-up situation. And additionally, like a lot of other successful businesses that we've seen, provide groceries as part of it. And guess what? Up in Sunday River, he's got access to some really great distributors that can be bringing stuff to his store that they won't necessarily see in the grocery store. He didn't need to do this. And now this has cost him, and now he's got no liquor license. Good luck with that, because that's the highest profit of anybody's business is in the liquor side of your business. What do you think?
It's staggering in the short-sightedness. It's this oppositional defiance that seems to be running rampant through a segment of our population, that their default setting is the mainstream media is lying, they're exaggerating the hype, and then the conspiracy theories weigh into it. It just lacks the short-sightedness of it and the lack of common sense and saying, well, even if I don't think I'm at risk, I'm going to still take precautions because I don't put somebody else at risk, seems to have been lost. That message seems to be lost. I don't get that. And the damage to his business, it's not just the loss of his liquor license and the loss of the revenue from that. The reputation is going to be out there now for years that this guy during the virus was so arrogant to say, out of the hell with this, I'm going to open up, I'm going to defy the state orders, I'm going to let people come in, I'm going to hug people as they walk in and show thanks. Half of them are going to get sick and some of them are going to die. To me, that is just mind-blowing.
The BBC put out this really great article about the seven types of people who start and spread misinformation, viral misinformation. I'm just going to read off the list to you, and I think that we're going to start to see these profiles based on our Facebook feeds and whatnot. So right off the bat, we have the joker, the scammer, the politician, the conspiracy theorist, the insider, the relative, and the celebrity. Every one of us can tell a story about an example of every one of these people. We're going to put this link in on the page so you guys can all take a look at it, because it's very important. I'll talk really quickly about parents, relatives. People that you trust, grew up with your whole life. Your parents are the ones who told you, don't go on the internet, it's dangerous. And they're the ones now telling you, no, it's no big deal, this is fake.
A good friend's parents who you know, they live in a red state, and they watch Fox News, and they have been under the impression that this has been no big deal, it's just the flu, or you know, nothing worse than the flu. And unfortunately, they both got it. And it's a friend of mine, and she had to be the one to say, you need to get your healthcare proxy in place now.
Because they were still going to the drive-through.
Yeah.
They're still meeting people. They're still trying to be safe, but not really safe.
They kind of thought it was funny that they got it.
And like, well, this doesn't happen here. That's a Boston thing. That's a California thing.
Right.
And we're seeing a lot of these rural states that are completely avoiding this because they're not being impacted, because their 100 isn't the same as somebody else's 10,000. But percentage of the population wise, that's just as bad a number. And when it catches on, it's going to just rip through it like wildfire. And that's what we're seeing now.
To me, one of the great ironies of our age, and not in a funny way, is a lot of people that scream about the mainstream media giving them false information, fake news, and all that garbage, are the ones that will swallow whole cloth the information they get from the right-wing media and never question any of that, because it fits a predetermined point of view that they have. And that only increases our divide. Again, there can only be one set of facts. There's no such thing as alternative facts. And so to your question, yes, I know a lot of these people. I'm friendly with them. I try not to get into political discussions because it's a waste of both of our times. You're not going to change my mind. I'm certainly not going to change yours.
Right.
But I do. And it's the ones that minimize it the most, I find the most frightening. They're the ones that are going to be super spreaders of this virus as it goes along, knowingly or unknowingly. And it's that insistence on it's a hoax and all the other crap that they're spreading only prolongs it for the rest of us and keeps us from getting businesses reopened, keeps the economy from reopening, and keeps us from resuming the good parts of our lives, as much as we're still going to be behaving differently for the indefinite future as a result of this.
So this brings up a great point. This is why we can't open the schools again. FYI.
Right.
This just one protest that just happened is a reason we can't open schools again. I don't know what your wife thinks or what this dad does at school. I know their kids. We stand in the same line. We pick each other's kids, up at the end of school. I'm not that involved in their life. They could have very well been at that protest. I'm not providing a situation for my child to go to with parents that want to live their life that way. And once again, our safety and health and future business are in the hands of someone else's behavior. And so it should be an egregious penalty to spread false information. And and that's the real misgiving here. This is the real sadness here, is that honest people who are good people are just victimized by the fact that no one will get up and say this. And I'm mad at Facebook, I'm mad at Twitter, I'm mad at Instagram, because the truth of the matter is people are suffering right now and dying right now because they don't know what the truth is. And if I'm a business person, why would I open my business in the middle of uncertainty? When you go, you do your impact study, how much traffic is going by, what can I buy my groceries for, what's my staff going to cost? And you're working out all these numbers. All that hard work can be taken away by one outbreak. Thank you, Walmart in Worcester.
In Worcester. Right? The state had to come in and ask them to close at the very end of April. I think it was April 30th after they a bunch of concerned citizens reached out to Rivera to say that this was going on. There were many people sick. They went in, they tested everybody. 81 of the workers there ended up positive. Many of them are asymptomatic, but it was 81. They just opened up this week again. I'm still not going there. They closed, and they said that they were planning on closing anyway, but the state just rushed it or whatever. I'm still not going there. I don't trust you now.
Now guess what? Who is going there? People who are looking to save money because they don't have money right now. So they're forced to be in a situation where they're shopping in an environment that's not ideal. It's not a surprise that it's two Walmarts that had these outbreaks. It's not a higher end situation. People who have lower economic income tend to live in a more crowded housing. They tend to be a hotspot for the transmission of this. And so you're basically feeding off these poor people. And now you're going to say, oh, you need to come back to work at my restaurant now and prepare food for other people.
As a small business owner, what is the plan for all of your employees who have children? Because, by the way, school isn't coming back this year. A lot of summer, no daycare until the end of June, maybe, but who knows if that's going to get pushed. Summer camps aren't really around. I know we talk about this every week, but that is something that an additional thing that the small business owner has to take into account, and it's costly. It's the second wave of the PPP has almost been exhausted. This time around, the average amount loaned to a small business was $79,000, which is nothing. That's for 2 months, $79,000. They're trying to get more plans going. We'll see. There's talk about this restart program that might give small business money for a longer period of time. But childcare is now going to be a small business problem.
We've talked about that we are in the same boat. And the truth of the matter is we're not in the same boat. We're in the same ocean in different boats. Right now, Jeff Bezos, since January 1st, added $25 billion to his own personal worth since January 1st.
Can I give a more startling statistic? Amazon makes $10,000 per second since shoppers started sheltering in place.
Yeah, so why don't you divide 26 billion by 79,000 and see how many small businesses you can save here. But that's not what's happening. He's donated $1 million, big deal, but we're firing employees that are trying to organize for a safer workplace. His CTO just left because
scathing letter.
Right, in a scathing letter, calling chicken crap, whatever. We talked about who are you going to be now, and who will you be when we get to the other side of this pandemic? Because right now, Jeff Bezos does not look like a great guy to me.
He seems to subscribe to the right wing is under the sway of this Ayn Randian philosophy of every man for himself, and it's a novel. You know, you shouldn't base your entire guiding philosophy in life based on a single novel, which is not all that well written either, by the way. I'm not a big fan, but they follow this sort of every man for himself and hey, I made it for myself and screw you. I don't need to do anything for you. It's all about me. That philosophy is dragging this country into the toilet. I just don't get that. You know, I run a community radio station. I'm very community oriented. You guys have known me a long time and you're the same way. You care about your community, you care about other people fundamentally. You care about the well-being of the people around you, your families, your friends, the community that you live in. I don't understand the unwillingness to just if you have the means to do something to make a real difference, to not step up and make a real difference, and instead to hoard your wealth and say, well, good luck to the peons.
Right.
Well, it's mind-boggling to me.
It is mind-boggling. And that's why I would like to put a spotlight on a business who is doing for the community. You know, we love them. We talk about them frequently. But, you know, Jack Sabby here in Framingham would be my spotlight pick for this week. They've donated countless pizzas to the hungry here in Framingham. They've completely rethought their business. They sell produce. They sell groceries. You can't find flour in any of the grocery stores. You don't have to. You can go to Jack Sabby. They're doing really, really well, and they are continuing to reach out to the community and helping the community.
So the reason we say this and we keep spotlighting on them or mentioning them is because we know them. And we're not just seeing it from them. We're seeing it from, like, for instance, Rail Trail, which does the same situation. You call them up, you order online, you stand outside, you pick up your order, you get the pizza, all the fixings, all in a box together. You can pick up your beer and go home and have your meal. And that's a really convenient thing to be able to do. Drive up, grab it, and go home and still provide for your family. Let's mention another great business that we both love.
Walden Meat. I don't know if you subscribe to them, but they are fantastic. We've been customers of theirs since 2016. They have different shares you can sign up for. They deliver the meat to your door, and it's all locally sourced.
Right. So local,
you don't
farmers,
have to
no
worry
hormones,
about, yeah.
you know.
And you feel good about supporting local business. I mean, I hope this is something that doesn't go away. I hope this support of the local business stays. I think it would make a stronger small business community. I think it would. I think it would make us all stronger if this part stayed.
So at the end of the day, who's getting hurt the most is the smaller guy. Billionaires in the United States increased their wealth by $282 billion in the first quarter of this year. So that's just the first quarter. So what if we wiped that and took that $282 billion and divided by 70K each? How many small businesses, not-for-profits, charities could get saved by just what was done in the first quarter of this year? These are the people telling you what's good for them, not what's good for you. Yeah.
They're worried about their boats, their second, third,
fourth houses. They're not doing what's good for small
business.
They're talking about what's good for their conglomerate.
Their kids, you know, $400,000 a year college.
I'm not sure that it's capitalism when the government is bailing you out every time there's an economic crisis, or that through your own bad management, you're hemorrhaging money and you're taking billions of taxpayer dollars to stay afloat. And again, we get $1,200 a piece if we're lucky, and the billionaire class and the private businesses are getting tens of billions of dollars to keep them afloat. You know, the disconnect is pretty wide. And at some point, you have to, if you're screaming about socialism, then you should be screaming about corporate socialism, corporate welfare just as loudly.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, think about, for instance, Aer Lingus took a grant from the government, started flying again, and didn't provide safe distance for people. And their argument is, oh, well, we have a scrubber inside the aircraft, which just circulates the air anyway, so the masks are pointless because we're just circulating the air inside. And they're using this as their defense to be able to operate this business in a poor fashion. Other airlines are saying, oh, you can pay to not have somebody sit in the middle seat. You shouldn't have a middle seat right now. The airline should definitely be opening up with a space between every single person and a mask for every person that goes on. And they should all be responsible for taking care of their sections of the airport, because that's what's safe to do right now.
One other benefit of this is that regardless of whether or not we take out the middle seat, which we should in all airlines if it's going to resume, this should at least stop the fight over the armrest between the passengers.
Well, and guess what?
I'm not touching you.
Jet fuel costs nothing right now. Their biggest complaint over the last 5 years has been the fuel costs rising. That can't be their argument right now. So why can't we offset these two things and coexist? People are still going to need to travel for emergencies, for hospitalization, for all sorts of reasons. Important business, some stuff does need to get done face-to-face. You can do this in a responsible manner, and that should be a requirement of anybody opening up again.
So speaking of innovating businesses, I think Ian has some very exciting news to share with you, David, about the next movie.
Do I?
Yeah, yeah, you do. I mean, hot off the presses,
We're
May
like,
15th.
You're like, Uncle David, it's important that you're here on the show. Paloma and Sabine, Paloma's coming up, Paloma's birthday is coming up. And for her birthday, we're going to watch the premiere of Scooby-Doo on May 15th online.
Right.
guess who opened up that floodgate? Universal with the premiere of Trolls
World Tour.
And so now all of a sudden they made $100 million in 2 weeks, and now other movie companies are saying, what? I'm in. Let's do this. So we're going to see these movie releases. The drive-ins are still happening. We've seen drive-up concerts happen now, where people, go into the concert in your car and you're able to listen to on your radio. Let's just move forward here, because the money is still out there and there's money to be made. You just have to do it differently now. And once it's over, do we continue to try to say, that was cheaper to do it that way. Maybe we should keep doing it that way. I also wanted to mention that there is discussion, I don't know how far along this is, but the NBA is talking about going back to business. And they mentioned something that I talked about almost in one of the first episodes, which is they want to take all the NBA to Disney World and basically do the whole tournament in Disney World. The hotels are there, the food service is there, they can isolate, they've got security, you can put some employees back to work, and you can be in a contained environment for production where the staff doesn't go and leave the property, they stay on for the entire time, and you can create a micro-quarantined sports entertainment complex. They're also talking about doing this for international football, where all the soccer teams in Europe play on a neutral field, play on the same field all the time, and continue to provide that sport. I think those are good ideas. I think those are great ways to gently open up the economy and gently open up the business in a controlled manner. What are your thoughts?
I agree. If they can do it in a controlled manner and there's regular testing, which is still, shortage across the country, if they can test regularly, make sure that the players are safe, if their families are there, that they're getting tested as well, and keep them on the grounds, I think it's a great idea. If they're able to make that work, I think it could become a model. I know baseball is trying to figure out a way to do the same. Major League Baseball is trying to come up with a similar plan. The NHL is trying to figure out ways to do it. If you can do it in a controlled site like that, there's no fans in attendance, then go for it. If they can do it safely, it's worth it. You know, you make a great point that, Florida wants to open the beaches and everything else. There has to maintain some safety in protocols along the way. You know, for Disney, if they're able to host the NBA and do a tournament there and have the parks become and the hotels become the structure for that, great. It becomes a month-long or two-month-long advertisement for Disney World. When they're able to reopen, the crowds will be flooding to them. But when parks like that reopen, are they going to have standard safety protocols in place? How do you maintain social distancing in Disney World? How do you make sure that there's hand sanitizer at the entrance and exit of every ride? How do you make sure they're wiping down every cart, however else you do those rides? There haven't been a long time. And all the adventure parks, how do you make sure that all of those have been sanitized throughout the course of the day as people start returning to them?
Well, I'll tell you what I would do. You only open a section at a time, and you open it up to 10% of the population. You can't just open the doors.
They actually are talking about that. And the headline was, Disney World might be opening up soon with shorter lines. And it's essentially that. I mean, just like Market Basket only allows 100 people in at a time, Disney World's only going to allow a certain number of people in as well. And will it work? I mean, I certainly hope so. Again, people have to follow the protocols. They have to care about their employees. And if those two things can happen, then it can be done safely. But you have to follow the protocols, and you have to care about your employees.
Yeah. Well, it's a great episode. I'm it's a harder conversation. The good weather's coming. The temptation's going to be there. You got to stay strong in your beliefs and do what's right for you. But be fair with the knowledge. And we wish everyone the best. Congratulations, WICN, on your fundraising effort. You're an important resource in this time, and we very much enjoy being a part of this. Thank you, David, for having us. Thank you, Aaron, for being on this. I'm Ian Barrett. This has been Business Beat. And we'll see you guys all again next week.